You're listening to Counterculture on RCR.
Reality Check Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to Counterculture, here with Marie. Joining me now, all the way from Florida, Trevor Loudon, commentator, writer, and of course, great friend of the show. How are you, Trevor?
I'm great, Marie. Thanks for having me on, and regards to all the listeners.
Yeah, so good to have you back. And what are we, 40-ish days out from fun and games? Have you got your popcorn ready, the cold beverages in the esky? Are you ready to go?
Well, I think more people are worried about not so much popcorn, but ammunition and food supplies and generators and things to, you know, to survive a period of turmoil. I think that's what more of us are, well, more people I know are focused on that than popcorn, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Is there actually a genuine concern amongst conservatives that there will be a Democratic backlash if Donald Trump were to win?
Oh, very much so. You know, like, a lot of us are expecting violence on the street this month. If not, when Trump wins, we definitely expect violence and disruption and chaos and everything from legal stuff to street riots to just, you know, the Democrats go on about climate, about election deniers. You wait and see who the real election deniers are if Trump wins this. They'll be doing every legal maneuver, every trick in the book you can imagine. And that will just, you know, people are already wound up now. They're just going to provoke people like crazy.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I know what I'm getting just from down here and looking at all of this going on is I can't help but getting a bit of deja vu, a whiff of 2016 about the whole election race. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, this is, you know, it was Trump versus Hillary, Trump versus Kamala. This is going the same way again. Everybody's on it's just that the ante has been upped, but it's very much a similar dynamic. And so we've had a lot of shenanigans between, you know, Hillary's time and now, and a lot of people have come to understand the depth of corruption in the government way beyond what they understood when Hillary was running. And this is widespread now. You know, you don't have to – you don't get a lot of pushback when you talk about this kind of thing, even in just – moderate audiences.
Now, I'm really intrigued that you've mentioned moderate audiences, because as the whole campaign has now started to unfold, you've had the palace coup, and yes. Kamala has been installed. With the Robert F. Kennedy Jr. sort of kind of doing an endorsement of Trump, like he's dropped out of the race, where does an undecided voter go, Trevor, and what does an undecided voter look like right now?
Look, I think there are. If you're an undecided voter now, you're paying no attention and probably won't vote. I would guess the undecided voter is way less than 2 or 3% now. You know, really? You've made up your mind now. You're going to vote Democrat, or you're going to vote Green, or you're going to vote Republican for Trump, and you know, this is the days of the old swing voter are long gone, I think. Every election it gets tighter, less and less undecideds. So this is a much more polarized electorate now. So the undecided swing voter probably isn't going to vote. You haven't made up your mind by now, you're not going to vote.
Because I do wonder whether or not, because in the United Kingdom, for example, you had reform come in as a spoiler, but what they didn't predict was the exceptionally poor turnout, and actually the most powerful voting bloc was the one that stayed at home and didn't go out at all. So
Labour got a landslide, but they got less votes than they did last time.
Exactly.
Because the vote was so down, especially for the Conservatives, well-deservedly so, that Labour just with a split vote and everything, Labour just got a landslide with a pathetic vote.
So what sort of danger then do you have, and who would be most at risk by this, for that apathetic voter, that one that really isn't tapped in, isn't interested, and are so disengaged with everything that they also are so disengaged that they won't even go out and vote? So who, that block, that voter block, who will that impact more, the Republicans or the Democrats?
I think it will impact the Republicans more, because a large proportion of the American Christian vote is in that camp. A large proportion. You know, less than 50% of Christians in America are registered to vote, and about half of those actually do vote. If they voted in even normal proportions, and they tended to vote conservative, Republicans will win hands down every time. But yeah, there's been a real program to try and get Christians to stay home this time. The Democrats are really focused on that. And some of your more naive pastors have bought into it. You know, they're not gonna, you know, President Trump's not really the most godly man that they want on earth. And so therefore it's better to have a communist, you know, to teach people a lesson.
Oh, the irony.
Seriously.
Really?
That's what they think. And if we lose, and I think the Republicans will win. I think Trump will win at least the election. But what happens after that is different. I think he will win. But if he loses, it will be because of the lazy Christians and cowardly Christians who put a virtuous veneer on their cowardice and irresponsibility. That's how I'm going to say it.
I know that I know Carrie Smith, and she's got a podcast called Deprogrammed, and I interviewed her last year. And she is a devout Christian, and she's one that highlights very much the wokeism in the ideology that is seeped in, particularly even amongst a number of traditional churches. We saw
Absolutely.
It during, I mean, you were back here for COVID. You would have seen that with the likes of the Church of England and such, who...
Oh, yeah. Well, I did a movie a couple of years ago, Enemies Within the Church, about that very phenomenon, the Marxist... Wokeism is Marxism. It's just a euphemism for Marxism. The woke church... It's huge in America now, and it's in the – you know, a lot of the Bible colleges are just as bad as the secular universities when it comes to Marxist indoctrination. So, yeah, I absolutely see that.
Mm. And, of course, Pennsylvania has already started their early voting, and that's one of those swing states where if the Christians did come out to play, make a tremendous difference. But then you've got so many of them that don't vote.
Look, my wife and I were up in – little place called Pottsville last summer, and that's right in the heart of coal mining country. This is a town that was once one of the richest in America. Now it's just pretty decrepit because all of the coal mining's gone. And like a lot of the West Coast, for instance. And, you know, but these are all traditional Democrats and Christians. There's churches everywhere. But there's also Trump flags now everywhere and, you know, American flags everywhere. This is an area where the Christians are coming out. These are ex-Democrats who are going to come out. But if you go into the Midwest and Kansas and a lot of the red states, they're coming out in the blue states, which is good. They've seen what Democrat socialism looks like. But these complacent ones out in Arkansas and Kansas and the prairie states, where they haven't really felt the bite of socialism so much, that's where the problem lies. That's where we're going to see a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of those problems are underlying. Again, I spoke to a nurse who works with sexual abuse, and she had a friend who went out to a small school in Kansas and wanted to install this software on every child had a device, only 150 kids in this high school. And this software allowed them to track whether or not the kids were using their school devices to look at porn. And the principal was like, oh, this is not happening. This is Kansas. This is not happening. And they said, look, 1 month, just put them on the devices for 1 month. In 1 month, they had more than 30,000 hits to Pornhub out of that school in Kansas. So, you know,
of 150 students.
Of 150 students. And it just shows you that there are things going on quietly and silently in the shadows that you just don't know about, isn't it? And you can't be too complacent.
No, you can't. I had a friend out in Oklahoma a while back, and his teenage son was telling me about the absolute, he said homosexuality has become fashionable in these little towns in Oklahoma you know, not just the girls, the boys too, you know. And this is the last thing you would expect from Oklahoma, but this is the influence of the woke culture. This is the making things fashionable that used to be not so fashionable. And so, you know, the culture in America is pretty badly poisoned, very badly poisoned. And I think a lot of people, they look at America and they see the strong anti-communist, individualistic, constitutionalist country that's the sort of bedrock of freedom. But look, America's hanging on by its fingertips. You know, it's been so culturally degraded through drugs and all the other, you know, cultural Marxist phenomena that we've had at every level and every community, even the most, you know, the areas you'd think would be the most conservative. You know, my boy was at a high school in a very, very conservative district in Florida. You should have seen the stuff he used to bring home from his school books. It was just woke Marxism that you'd expect in Pennsylvania or expect in New York. But, you know, this was in one of the most conservative districts of Florida. So America culturally is really, really just hanging on. And politically, it's very problematic. You know, one bad election. You know, this is what I say. People say, oh, well, if we elect Kamala Harris, you know, we'll come back strong in 2028. I say, look, there's at least 30 million illegals in the country now, probably more like 40 million. Say 70% of them can vote. Kamala Harris is going to give them all citizenship and voting rights. That'll be 25 million new Democrats. You know, and where elections are usually won or lost by less than 5 or 6 million votes. This is what I say. We're in a communist revolution in America, and illegal immigration is one of the main weapons. And all Kamala has to do is win this race and legalize every illegal and give them voting rights. And she will rule as long as she wants to, or her party will rule as long as she wants to. Then they'll pack the Supreme Court. So you put new justices on the Supreme Court, which they've already promised to do, all left-wingers. So you won't be able to appeal to the Supreme Court. Then they're going to put tax unrealized capital gains. They're going to give new homeowners $25,000 to buy a house, right? But they're going to bring in a tax on unrealized gains. So you buy a house for $200,000. 2 years later, it's worth $300,000. They will tax you on that $100,000 profit you haven't even made yet. It's unrealized gains. You know, technically, you're worth $100,000 more on paper, so you'll pay tax on that $100,000. Can you imagine what that's going to do to businesses and the middle class in this country?
Well, what it'll do, it'll send people leveraging to the bank. And, you know, we all know how tenuous they can be when things get a little bit squirrely. So,
But for a recipe for social chaos, wipe out the middle class, wipe out property ownership, you know, the energy problem, you know, they're going to collapse the economy. The US dollar won't survive very long under a Kamala Harris presidency. We'll have interest rates through the roof. And you'll get people on the streets, but you will have millions of illegal immigrants who can then be drafted into the US military or given citizenship, quick citizenship in exchange for military service. And, you know, like the current US military would be very reluctant to fire on other Americans. You know, if you're from South Carolina, you don't like to shoot people from North Carolina, you know, but if you're from Guatemala, or if you're from Gabon or Syria or Uzbekistan and you're in the US military and they give you a gun and tell you to put down this rebellion in Kansas or Texas, are you going to hesitate? We are seriously in a revolution, seriously in a revolution. And I'm urging everybody, whether you love Trump or hate him or whatever, get out and vote for him to stop communism. That's my message.
One of the things that I saw quite interesting, it was a financial podcast or just a clip, and it was discussing the number of mortgages that were on 5-year fixed terms, commercial mortgages, that are all due to come off in 2025.
Yeah.
Now, that is actually something, that is a disaster looming on the horizon, because with all of those mortgages coming off, financially, you want to have somebody that's going to work very hard to pull inflation back and pull those mortgage rates down so they can at least refix.
Well, you know, how many businesses, okay, you've had a five-year mortgage on 3% or whatever, and you're going to have to refinance at 8% or whatever it is, if you can get a mortgage, which might be completely problematic in itself. How many small businesses are going to topple if that comes on? If you have, unless you have a president who's onto it, who understands the economics of it and is working like crazy to bring the interest rates down, stabilize the currency, and critically, massively drop energy prices, which are one of the main drivers of the wage price spiral that we're in right now. You know, like we were energy independent until Biden came into office. Now we've got to buy oil from countries who hate us, and the price is way above what it should be. You know, the first thing Trump's going to do is drill, baby, drill. Just drill in your backyard if you want to. Drop that price of energy down, because the businesses with what's coming are going to need every bit of breathing space they can. And we want to keep that free market, that free economy going. We especially want to keep small businesses going. We don't want BlackRock and everybody swooping in and buying farmland and farms and businesses all over the country. So it's another critical reason why this election is so important. People cannot be sitting it out to 2028 or whatever. There won't be a 2028 if we lose this one. Not a meaningful one.
You must have spat your sirrah at the telly when you heard Kamala Harris when they asked her about energy, and she said she was very pro-fracking.
Because Pennsylvania is so critical. Well, it's critical till they get the vote, then who cares after that? Look, she is just a pathological liar. She's spent a whole, for years, she's been anti-fracking, anti-energy. Well, now I'm pro because my election depends on Pennsylvania, where fracking is an incredibly important part of the community. So I'll lie about that. This is very shocking, is it? You know, she's talking about building a border wall now, even though she's been an open border girl for a decade. Look, she had the most left-wing record in the U.S. Senate, worse than Bernie Sanders, right? But now the New York Post calls her a small-C conservative. You know, this is the kind of this is a Taylor Swift campaign. This is just, she is going to lie and lie and never get any scrutiny, and she's just going to be, it's all about her shaking hands, her waving, you know, whatever, and there's going to be no real policy. And or the only policy is we hate Trump, we hate Trump, we hate Trump, let's get Trump killed, we hate Trump, we can't have Trump. That's a whole campaign. She'll never be called, she'll never have any real scrutiny. So, yeah, she just lies.
I had a question here, but you've actually pretty much answered it. I said Kamala, is she a Marxist or a moron or all of the above? And I think we've covered off definitely Marxist.
She's a Marxist with moronic tendencies.
You like to research and scratch below the surface. She's not come to this as a first generation, well, this is a wonderful new idea that I learned in college.
Oh, I know.
This is ingrained in her, is it not?
Look, I've got a book coming out in a few days. It's called Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots. And it's going to be available worldwide on Amazon, because everybody needs to know this stuff. Look, most common, if you ever meet a communist in life, and not most people haven't, they become communists in university, you know. They get some Marxist professors, they get all fired up about Palestine or something, and they become communists. She was a communist from the cradle. She's never been anything but a communist. She was going to a communist social club in elementary school, primary school, called the Rainbow Dream. They had Marxist poets every Thursday night, you know. Her father was an affirmative action Marxist. Stanford University didn't have enough Marxists in its economics department at the time, so they recruited the best Marxist they could find. They mounted a campaign to recruit the best Marxist, and her mother, Shyamala Gopalan, is a hardcore Marxist as well. You know, that
They were part of a, both were part of a group called the Afro-American Association, which was the group that spawned the Black Panther Party, which a lot of people don't understand. That was a pro-China, pro-North Korea, Marxist, Maoist group. People think it's just a pro and a black nationalist group. No, it was Maoist. And her parents were part of the group that, that sprang from. You know, she has been involved with Marxists since she was 6 months old to now. The same, the Maoists who came to the movement in the 60s and who are now running the Democratic Party and the, a lot of Hollywood and most of the labor unions and that sort of thing in America, that's her people. Street-level Maoists, Maoists who went into business, Maoists who went into the leadership of the Democratic Party. She is completely part of that movement. She would be nothing without that movement, nothing at all.
She is someone who has appeared to have fallen upwards and certainly slipped away to political ascendancy. So being tapped in, Trevor, as I know you am, you are, to, you know, the whole social element of the world, the whole diddy-diddy-dum-dum situation, and she was pretty tight with the didda back in the day. Will this stick to her like they tried to stick Epstein with Trump, or are they all, is currently the Hollywood and media elite running for cover with this whole P. Diddy scheme?
Yeah, well, see, you know, they tried to hang Epstein around Trump's neck because that's the left-wing narrative and they would drive that. No, I think she'll be pretty much insulated from this. You know, there won't be any court cases till after the election, and she'll be protected. You know, the media is protecting her every step of the way. So they won't let something like that be hung around her neck. You know, she is, some of the people around her are the most corrupt and vile people you could possibly imagine. You know, the Podestas and types like that. But it's not going to be allowed to do it unless Trump makes a big issue of it somehow. But I think they'd be scared of the backlash amongst women voters. I don't think they will go there on that. But Trump's full of surprises, you never know. But I don't think it would be a very profitable way to go. There's more than enough to concentrate on her connections and her policies to scare the hell out of people if you really focus in on them.
Which is what was so disappointing about the debate. Like, she was obviously prepared within an inch of her life. There was sort of hints of collusion between moderators and the questions and how they handled, you know, thank you, Madam Vice President, to we need to move on to the next question, Mr. Trump, you know, like that, and in terms of how they handled it. One of the things that I felt that Trump, they were very clever, whoever prepared, because she obviously didn't do it, they were very, very clever in their preparation to bait bear traps that they knew Donald Trump would fall into, and he did.
Yeah, I don't think that was not Trump's finest moment at all. He was not prepared. He was too, because I think he'd had such an easy time with Biden, and I think he believed, you know, I believe Kamala was pretty stupid, but he's got to understand that the people around her are very skilled operatives, and they baited traps for him, and a whole bunch of things he could have hammered her on, he just walked right past because she got him a bit rattled. He just looked grumpy through the whole thing, not as usually smiling self, and that's his fault, you know. He's to blame for that.
So will there be another one?
No. I would be shocked. He's already said no. Look, the only way he would do one is if it was on a neutral or a conservative forum, and that's not going to happen. She would never allow that. So she's put it out there, we'll do one on CNN, and he's saying no, you know, because CNN is as bad as ABC, you know. So it wouldn't be, I don't think it would be to his advantage to do it. But she's not going to appear at the Al Smith dinner, which is a traditional roast type dinner. It's a charity dinner that every Republican and Democrat candidate attends it. She's not going to appear at that because she knows that's more ad lib. That's more to and fro. She couldn't be prepared very well for that. That's the dinner a few years ago, a friend of mine, Evan Sayat, wrote the lines for Trump. He said, his joke was, I bumped into Hillary Clinton on the stairway. She said, pardon me. I said, I might. that was the Al Smith dinner in 2016, I believe.
Which is, again, the whiff of 2016 that I'm getting this time around. I mean, yeah. In 2016, you had Biden. Oh, no, sorry, 2020, rather. You had Biden in the basement, right, for the whole campaign. Well, they're kind of putting her in this leftist media basement.
Yes, a cocoon.
Yes, cocoon.
Completely. She, you know, you can't – they're not going to let her – get out and ad lib. They're not going to let her. Well, she's done one interview for 15 minutes to a friendly audience in the whole campaign. Have you ever seen an American election campaign where one of the key candidates gives one 15-minute interview? You
know? Well, that town hall that she did with Oprah, and there was that one question that was around the border, which was a good question. And she then proceeded to pull out all of her tropes that she pulls out. Well, you know, I used to defend or prosecute people down, blah, blah, blah. As she does. And she didn't answer the question. Oprah then tried to sort of paraphrase the word salad to answer the question. And that was pretty much the highlight of the whole interview. And then you have Meryl Streep coming on with, I mean, how on earth she's considered one of the greatest actresses of our time? Because if they, you know, say, oh, hello, you know, Madam President. Oh, I mean, it was fawning, Trevor. It was embarrassing.
And it had something like 200,000 views, which for an Oprah thing is just pathetic. I would have expected 5 million. Something like that. And when Trump gets interviewed by Elon Musk, what do you get? 1.5 billion views or some incredible number?
Massive.
So look, the energy on the ground. Look, if you took the polling out of it, which is pretty rough, I think the energy, that the momentum is definitely in Trump's favor by a long shot. If he hadn't screwed up the debate, it would be even more in his favor. But it's in a legitimate election, Trump wins quite handily. That's how it's going. The famous Pennsylvania cookie poll. This is always a reliable one. There's a bakery in Pennsylvania that every election cycle, they bake red cookies and blue cookies, and they take orders from all over America. So the red cookies are for Trump. The blue cookies are for Kamala. Well, Kamala's had 500 cookies have been ordered. Trump's had 5,400 cookies ordered so far. So the energy on the ground is well in Trump's favor. Well in Trump's favor. It's the big inner cities, big Democrat strongholds, lots of cocooning, lots of, you know, propaganda to try. Their goal is to keep it close so that it's possible to cheat a bit. You know, like if Joe Biden was a week out from the election and 12 points down, that's a pretty big gap to cheat. You know, how do you go from 12 points down to winning by half a point? But if you're 2 points down or 1 point down or you're level pegging, you can find enough votes to get you through in the key states.
Mind you,
and even if they lose, they're setting it up for a very contentious, you know, you think there was some problems after the last election. If it's in any way close, which I expect it will be, you're going to see it on steroids after this coming one.
Well, they managed to, was it in Pennsylvania, chew out in a 15-point lead with mail-ins. I think in Pennsylvania last time they managed to chew out a 15-point lead with mail-ins. So then this time around, because last time you had the whole shroud of COVID to be able to justify shabby election practices. Have those practices been tightened up? And will we see that the shabbiness appear again this time around?
Look, there will be some, but it, virtually all the red states have tightened up their procedures, and even some of the blue states have. Pennsylvania is not going to be counting mail-in ballots after a certain date and that kind of thing. yes, there have been a lot of good, you don't hear about this, but there's been a lot of good work done by election integrity activists, which is going to make it a lot harder to cheat. And they don't have the cover of COVID to do it. But I'm not saying there's not going to be any. I think if there was no cheating, Trump wins by 10 points. But with cheating, he might win by 2 or 3 points, you know. But I think the odds are in his favor right now. But who knows what's going to happen between now and the election and what shenanigans will happen. But I don't think the main reason the people are pushing the cheating narrative right now is to discourage conservatives from voting. The left are even pushing this narrative to try, oh, well, my vote doesn't count, I won't vote. Make it a self-fulfilling prophecy. But look, the enthusiasm for getting rid of this government is high. You know, you saw it in New Zealand with Jacinda Ardern, you know. It didn't even turn out close in the end, did it?
No. Well, one of the things that has amazed me with the debate and that town hall to a greater or lesser degree with Oprah is that Kamala is campaigning as if she isn't the incumbent vice president in office. Which I find astounding. And she's talking.
Because who would want to be? Who would want to be associated? This, look, you know, Trump's best line in the debate was right at the end. He should have said it right at the start and all the time. You've been vice president for 3.5 years. Why haven't you done all of this stuff? Why haven't you sealed the borders as you're now talking about? Who would want to be tied to this administration? There is no achievements. There's nothing that's got better. There's nothing. All she has got is her gender, her racial background, and her communist networks. That's why she is where she is now. She has got no policies to run on. She's got no achievements to stand on, either hers or Joe Biden's. Nothing has improved in America in the last 3.5 years, not one thing. And most things have got worse, from crime to inflation, energy prices, general division in the society, worries about world instability. There's not one thing that's improved. So yeah, absolutely. She's not going to campaign as an incumbent. She's trying to reinvent herself as this new broom that's going to sweep clean. But it's just the biggest scam you've ever seen. But their weapon is demonize Trump and his supporters and cocoon Kamala as much as you possibly can and just try and use the Taylor Swift effect and Oprah Winfrey effect to get her across the line, or at least get her close enough
that
they can do what they need to do.
The cabinet meeting last week, was that a Biden proof of life video? It was weird. I mean, I know Kamala's out on the campaign trail, so she wouldn't have been there to take the meeting. But Jill, really? I mean, surely the Secretary of State could have done it. Where was Anthony Blinken?
Well, yeah, well, I think Jill's been the power behind the throne for some time now, you know. It's really Obama and those people that are really, and Xi Jinping, I think, that are the powers behind the throne. But, yeah, I don't think they really cared about it. So let Jill have her fantasies. Let Jill have a little last gasp at power. I don't think there's any great significance in it. They don't care. There's no policy, big policy decisions to be made right now. It's all focused on the election. So it was really a nothing burger.
So they just need to pray that he doesn't fall off his perch between now and the 20th of January.
Well, they might quite like that, you know, because that would make Kamala president. And that might give her a 1 or 2 points boost, you know. You actually, you know, have the stature of the president. With some people, that might make a little bit of a difference. Certainly wouldn't hurt her. So I think they'd be quite keen if Joe Biden had a rock climbing accident or something like that. Or,
don't eat the soup, you know, Joe.
Drop dead while competing in the Boston Marathon or something.
So then just looking at, instead of Biden falling off his perch, but Trump, who has now had a second assassination attempt in your backyard identified. Now this Ryan Rove, I had a look at him, and he, to me, is the absolute antithesis of Marxist ideology taken to its progressive zenith, is he not? He is somebody that is wholly captured.
yeah, he's brainwashed or self-brainwashed, whether somebody else did it or he's an opera. We don't know. See, the guy's obviously a bit of a fruitcake. But the big question that nobody has answered is he sat in that golf course, by the golf course, for 12 hours waiting for Trump. How did he even know he would be there? That was an unscheduled stop. That is the burning question, absolute burning question. How did he know? Did he, you know, he just got lucky. He decided to sit for 12 hours just on the day that Trump would turn up there. You know, no, somebody tipped him off.
Well, they've definitely now found apparently a box that he sent to a friend before he went to Florida has been handed over to the FBI. And in there was data. There was a note saying along the lines, I think if this is found, I've obviously not been successful at assassinating Donald Trump. I know, his plant feels very plantish, but with that, they then also done metadata off his phone, and he's pinged cell towers in and around the area for the days preceding that weekend, which then says to me, well, he's scoping it out. Well, why? You know, there's obviously information. He's gotten some information from somewhere. And it's rather interesting. So therefore, the Secret Service, I mean, they copped a bit of flack after Butler, Pennsylvania. Have they copped flack this time, or are they sort of now patting themselves? Yeah, they have. Or are they patting themselves on the back that they
There was no shots. Well, he didn't get off a shot. They did the acting head of Secret Service got on straight after the day because they caught him, you see. Mm-hmm. They only caught him because a passerby photographed his number plate. You know, it wasn't their skill. And so he patting himself on the back, blah, blah, blah. But they haven't asked the question, how did the guy know? Why wasn't the drones over the area? How could this guy have been sitting for 12 hours in an area the Secret Service would have known Trump was going to be there that day, but Routh didn't know? So why didn't the Secret Service scope the place out? Look, you know, one time you can put down to maybe gross incompetence, maybe. Though that's an organization that's not known for gross incompetence. Twice, you know, somebody tipped that guy off. Who was it? Somebody made sure that the other young guy could walk around carrying a gun and hop on a roof and take a pot shot at the president or several shots. Somebody, I think this goes beyond mere negligence. There is some level of collusion at some point somewhere. And one of the great things I'd love to see about a Trump presidency is full investigations of this. And whoever is responsible, whoever tipped these people off, gets punished to the full extent of the law. And I'm so pleased that Ron DeSantis, my governor, is mounting a separate Florida investigation into this. I think that's great because clearly we do not trust the feds. This is beyond incompetence.
Yeah. And I mean, DeSantis too, he is presidential in waiting. I mean, he had a crack at the primary last time, but he's somebody that has shown proven economic stability within the state. And it is intriguing to see whether or not if he has got the gumption, we'll sort of stand again maybe in 2028. I think he's...
Well, I hope he does. I know he does. And he's been a bit damaged. You know, looking back now, it's probably better that maybe he shouldn't have run. But he made the decision that he made. And I think he will run again. You know, and he is still very popular in the state, still very popular around the country. The hardcore Trump base is a bit angry with him because... He sort of went out of turn, you know, and they get offended by that. But no, I've always been a fan, and I hope he does run again. Well, I hope Trump is given the opportunity to turn the country around enough that we have an election in 2028 that means something. But DeSantis is a very, very clever man and a very good, is a very powerful enemy of the left. They fear him more than Trump. But we will see. I think Trump has got enough good people around him now that he's really going to dismantle a lot of the left-wing apparatus in this country.
Mm. Well, we'll catch up for a post-mortem because there will be one, I'm sure. So we'll definitely do that.
Sure.
But the book, which was on the verge of coming out, so give us a quick catch-up on the book, when it's coming out, where to grab it if people want to get the new book, Stealth.
Yeah, it's called Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots. People can get it from our website now, but it's only available in the States right now. But when we put it on Amazon, which will hopefully be the end of this week, we just had a few problems with one of our staff who had days off sick and couldn't do the final stuff. Yeah, Stealth, Kamala Harris's Communist Roots will be available on Amazon hopefully early next week. Well, mm-hmm. You know, every day counts right now. We should have had it out 2 weeks ago, but it'll be out, and it's 300 pages of very damning evidence about both Kamala Harris and Tim Walz and the movement that made them. It's a book about the personalities, but both of them are part of a much wider movement, a movement that basically works for China. And so this is what I go into. This is what it details. And whether you live in America or not, you'll see the same things playing out in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, same Britain, the same things are happening in all the Western countries right now.
Mm.
China has its networks that are promoting politicians favorable to them. And so this is playing out. Anthony Albanese is a classic case in Australia, for instance. And I've got a book coming out on him too.
Oh, there you go. You'll be now, just our quick catch up here. Darlene Taker is
Oh, yeah. Okay.
She's still in the Walker just, but I think she's going to be going for a swim.
Okay.
Yes. Breaking news. Chris Hipkins is across, actually, in the UK at the moment at the Labour Party conference to see if he can get some fresh ideas to bring back for Labour here in New Zealand from Keir Starmer.
Ooh, that's very nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, charming. Considering that Keir Starmer has now got a favourability rating worse than Rishi Sunak's. But, you know, let's not split that here, shall we?
Exactly. But, I'd be surprised if Chris Hipkins is still a leader coming into the next election. But, you know, they're building up their international connections. You know, Keir Starmer is an old Trotskyist. You know, he got himself a file from the Czechoslovakian intelligence services back in 1986. You know, he portrays himself as a sort of relatively modern, even right-wing Labour figure, but it's all total BS. It's a complete BS. So it's not surprising that Chris would go along and hobnob with his comrade Keir.
Yeah, well, and speaking of hobnobbing, Jacinda's been doing a little bit of late. You know, let's not talk about how we're jetting off left, right and centre and telling everybody that they need to be good for climate change. She did pop up and see her brother from another mother, Justin, and I hear that he could be seeing the back of the door fairly soon because the polls have not been particularly favourable for him for next year.
Yeah, there's a guy, and I've just forgotten his name, standing in the wings ready, you know, to take over from Justin. And that might be right because he's sort of outlived his youthfulness now. His youthful good looks and boyish charm have worn very thin on the Canadian people. And I get Canadians all the time just in despair at what's happening to their country. Horrific. So, yes, I'm hearing that too, that he may be gone fairly soon. And I just wish I could remember the guy that's lined up to replace him. No better. You know, just as bad. But I think Canada has an election in 2025.
Yeah, so do.
Let's hope Poivier or someone else can, you know, do something to bring that country back a little bit.
We'll all have to watch this space. Well, Trevor, as always, it's been enlightening. We'll catch up for, as I said, that US election post-mortem. Go well, my friend, and hopefully the fun and games aren't too taxing on your blood pressure.
Well, I live in Florida. This is pretty relaxed country here. So, but yeah, it's we're all on tenterhooks. Put it that way. Everything, our futures, our children's futures. This election is going to impact us in every way. So, I'm just about to embark on a month-long tour all around the country. I'm going to Colorado, California, Pennsylvania twice, Kansas. I'm just going to be on the road for the whole month of October, just stirring people up as much as I possibly can to get them to the polls. Just leave nothing on the table. We just got to do everything here, everything.
Oh, well, good luck for you. And I'm just pleased that I don't have to make a decision to vote in that election. So I'm quite lucky down here. I'll hide down here and watch with interest from afar. Yes. Hey, Trevor Loudon from the United States, thank you for your time. And of course, that book, Stealth Kamala Harris and Her Communist Roots, that will be, as he said, on Amazon very soon. To keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, it's on my website now, trevorloudon.com. But, you know, it costs a lot of money to get a book to New Zealand, but mail a book to New Zealand, but it will be available worldwide on Amazon hopefully in the next week, but not long after that if it isn't. So,
all right, take care, Trevor. Hey, this has been Trevor Loudon here on Counterculture. Don't disappear. I've got some of your feedback coming up very, very shortly here with Marie on RCR. Take care. Thanks, Trev.
Thank you, Marie. Thanks to all the listeners.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.